We're finishing up the parables from this section of Matthew's gospel. Matthew records five of Jesus' major sermons. This one's coming from the third one. And all of these parables, if you remember, they're referencing what as a central point to them? They're all dealing with what? The kingdom of God or kingdom of heaven. Who is the kingdom? The kingdom is referring to God, and especially in these circumstances, is referring to Jesus himself because he's the one on whom the kingdom is being founded. So when we get to these particular two parables that start off today's gospel passage, you've got the treasure hidden in a field and a pearl of great price. What is the treasure? What is the pearl? Or to phrase it just a little bit differently, who is the treasure? Who is the pearl? Hint. That treasure is Jesus. The pearl is Jesus in both cases. And the people who find them, what do they do in order to possess the treasure, the pearl? He just walks out in the field and puts as much as he can into the boot of his car and drives off. No. What did he do? He went and sold everything that he had in order to possess the field that had the treasure in it. Same thing with the pearl. He discovers this pearl of, must have been one really good pearl. But again, he goes and he sells off everything he has in order to possess the pearl, Jesus. Now, that's making a faith statement in there, isn't it? For us, we know from scriptures and from the teachings of those who have written and meditated on these gospel passages long before us, going back to first century AD, that it is referring to Jesus and is talking about what's necessary from us to be very deeply involved in and enriched by a gift of faith in Jesus. We need to do what? Just like these two people in these two parables. We need to be willing to, I've got some lawyers waiting to come rushing in and sit down with each and every single one of you so you can sign over your house, your car, your furnishings, your jewelry, your laptop, your flat screens, everything you own. No, right? But what is being asked of us? That we give to Jesus as much as he has given to us. And how much has he given to us, which is what makes him the treasure and the pearl? He gave everything. First reading is from the book of Kings. We've got Israel's third king, David's firstborn son, who is now ascended to the throne, been anointed king, still really young, and God comes to him in this dream and says, ask of me anything you want, and I will give it to you. Can you imagine that kind of an offer? But what does he ask for? He is aware that it is from God alone that he has been called and anointed and set in place of being king over all of this people. That his authority is not his, it's coming from God, and that in order to exercise it rightly, he needs to rely on God's wisdom to guide him in his leadership of the people. The pearl, the treasure for him, is knowing where he is. And that is upon God that he must rely for everything and able to exercise just and true leadership over the nation. But now here's where things get interesting. Solomon, he had a really great start. How did he end? Was he as wise at the end as he was at the beginning? Correct answer would be nowhere near. What happened to him? He allowed himself to be deceived, distracted, and deluded by that nice triple set of temptations that God's been using on humanity ever since Adam and Eve. Pride, lust of the eye, lust of the flesh. How many wives did he have? How many wives did he have? 700. How many concubines did he have on top of the 700 wives? 300. Can you imagine, gentlemen, trying to remember, keep track of 1,000 anniversaries and birthdays? I mean, that would throw your wisdom down the sewer in a hurry, all by itself. But all joking aside, he allowed himself to be just completely sidetracked and his leadership corrupted so that when his son, Rehoboam, takes the throne after him, that guy's an absolute total wreck and disaster. And the weakening of the kingdom had already begun under Solomon because he's getting distracted and corrupted all over the place, winds up taking the kingdom and tearing it into two major shreds. The 10 northern tribes go off on their own and make their own king, and the two southern ones are left there with Rehoboam and a series of, how to put it politely, morons that followed him onto the throne after him. He lost sight of the necessity of keeping God at the center of his own life so that it would be at the center of his leadership of the people. He's, in other words, distracted by what major thing that Satan really loved to trip us up with. I can think of a three-letter word. He has an S on one end and an X on the other. I'll let you figure out the vowel. But, you know, literally, that is what has destroyed more lives, more marriages, more kingdoms, more nations over the course of human history than anything else. We're happening to be sitting on the 58th anniversary of a document issued by Pope Paul VI in 1965, that out of all the official teachings of the church is probably the most loathed of all of them, because it came right in the middle of the swinging 60s and the, you know, free love generation, and it dealt with the topic that church has officially been speaking on ever since the first century of the church's history, A.D., and has been unchanged all the way down to our time and will not change until Jesus comes again. What's it deal with? One topic that gets more people upset and stirred up and enraged than probably anything else. It talks about the immorality of the practice of artificial contraception. Because what did it do? What has that practice done? It has separated the integrity of marital relationship from marriage. Remember, morally, the only right moral place to exercise the sexual function of human beings, male and female, is within the context of the holy sacrament of matrimony and no place else. And we took it and shredded it apart. It got turned into entertainment, something to do for fun, something to do for distraction. And all of the different sexual immoralities that are taking place right now today, you can trace their roots all the way back to 1965, when so many in the church, laity and clergy alike, rebelled against it. The breakup of marriages, the distortion of what human sexuality even is, the inability to even understand that there are male and female, period. All of it traces back to there. All the pornography, the child abductions and being sold into slavery. They don't just mean making workers and stamping out license plates. I mean being sold into sexual slavery. You know, think Jeffrey Epstein. All of that stuff, it all traces right back to that rebellion where we allowed Satan to deceive us into pride, thinking we can make up our own rules and do what we want. You know, so many priests, when couples would come asking them if it was right for them to do that, they would just go, you know, they'd bail on themselves and just say, well, do whatever you feel is right, instead of being faithful teachers. Basically left the laity kind of swimming in the middle of a river without a lifeboat or a life jacket or anything to hold on to. And we've made a mess. Because we forgot. You go back to the gospel, the treasure and the pearl. Not what's, but a who. What is most precious, what is most important for the life of every single last human being is Jesus. He's like a hidden treasure in that, you know, you literally, you don't see a body laying on the altar during the consecration, do you? But what do we believe? He's hidden under the appearances of bread and wine, but what is our teaching? That it is truly the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ, the most precious, valuable treasure in the universe. The most important pearl in the universe is Jesus. But instead of holding fast to it, we've let go of him and we're out grasping at all of these other things that do not give us life, but suck the life out of us and bring us death. Remember the last part of the parables in today's gospel passage was the kingdom of heaven is like a fisherman going out and casting a net into the sea, and when he pulls it in, he stands there doing what? These things really make us feel comfortable, don't they? But he sits there and he opens up the net and he's taking the stuff that's worthwhile and putting it into a bucket, and the rest of it's getting tossed because it's not worth keeping. Ties in with last week, the parable about the weeds and the wheat. What happened to the weeds when Jesus says they go out and start harvesting the grains? The weeds get bundled up and giving a nice, lovely spot on the mantelpiece in the living room. No, they're thrown into the fire and burnt. Ooh. But again, we keep letting ourselves be distracted, deceived, corrupted, and confused by Satan's lies. Over and over again, the most precious thing for our lives, not a thing, but a person, but the one who has given his all for us, and to be able to stay united with him is asking us to give our all to him. Nothing else, no one else matters more. There is absolutely nothing else or no one else of greater value than Christ. No one else is worthy of your life. Except for Jesus. Do not let yourself be deceived or corrupted or distracted, but keep your heart firmly on the altar with Christ.